This is the listening part of your Year 12 exam in English of 2012. It will consist of three tasks. You will hear the texts twice. Task 1. Waiting at the airport. You will hear a reporter interviewing four people at the airport. They are telling the reporter how they feel and what they usually do at the airport. Listen and mark which statement describes which traveller. Tick the appropriate box. Look at the example. You have a minute to read the task.
A new survey out today has revealed that we're spending more time than ever waiting in airport departure lounges. So we sent our reporter Nicole Watson to Heathrow to find out how people are passing the time there.
Thanks, Dan. Excuse me, madam, where are you flying to today?
I'm going to Madrid.
And can I ask how you normally spend your time while you're waiting for your flight?
I usually buy a paperback and just go and sit somewhere quiet.
So, you just read until your flight is called?
Yes, that's right. Once I got so involved in the book I was reading that I missed my plane.
Really?
Yes, it was quite embarrassing, actually.
And what about you, sir? How long have you been here today?
I've been sitting here for nearly 5 hours.
Wow, that's a long time.
Yes, there's a problem with the plane or something.
Oh, and how have you been spending your time?
Well, I really love people watching and airports are just brilliant for that. So that's all I've been doing, really. Oh, I've also called my parents to say goodbye.
Right. And the gentleman sitting next to you, how do you feel about waiting at airports?
I absolutely detest it, to be honest. Luckily, I only live 10 minutes away, so I usually check in as late as I can.
And how are you spending your time here today?
I'm doing a part-time business management course at the moment, so I'm trying to catch up on my coursework.
And why are you travelling today?
I'm flying to Hamburg for some meetings. I'm supposed to be seeing some clients as soon as I arrive, but I see the flight's been delayed. Just my luck, eh?
And how about you, madam?
Well, I've been looking around all the shops. I have 3 kids and I never get time to shop for myself, so I'm having a great time today.
Have you bought anything?
Yes, a handbag and some perfume. I'm also thinking of buying a camera, but I think they might be cheaper online.
And where are your kids now?
They're with my husband in that restaurant over there having lunch. My youngest is usually very good, but he's being very difficult today. So we've decided to take it in turns to look after them.
Thanks very much. So, that's how people are passing the time at Heathrow today, Dan. Back to you in the studio.
Thanks, Nicole. Now, these days, many people seem to...
You have half a minute now to check your work. Then you will hear the text a second time.
A new survey out today has revealed that we're spending more time than ever waiting in airport departure lounges. So we sent our reporter Nicole Watson to Heathrow to find out how people are passing the time there.
Thanks, Dan. Excuse me, madam, where are you flying to today?
I'm going to Madrid.
And can I ask how you normally spend your time while you're waiting for your flight?
I usually buy a paperback and just go and sit somewhere quiet.
So, you just read until your flight is called?
Yes, that's right. Once I got so involved in the book I was reading that I missed my plane.
Really?
Yes, it was quite embarrassing, actually.
And what about you, sir? How long have you been here today?
I've been sitting here for nearly 5 hours.
Wow, that's a long time.
Yes, there's a problem with the plane or something.
Oh, and how have you been spending your time?
Well, I really love people watching, and airports are just brilliant for that. So that's all I've been doing, really. Oh, I've also called my parents to say goodbye.
Right. And the gentleman sitting next to you, how do you feel about waiting at airports?
I absolutely detest it, to be honest. Luckily, I only live 10 minutes away, so I usually check in as late as I can.
And how are you spending your time here today?
I'm doing a part-time business management course at the moment, so I'm trying to catch up on my coursework.
And why are you travelling today?
I'm flying to Hamburg for some meetings. I'm supposed to be seeing some clients as soon as I arrive, but I see the flight's been delayed. Just my luck, eh?
And how about you, madam?
Well, I've been looking around all the shops. I have 3 kids and I never get time to shop for myself, so I'm having a great time today.
Have you bought anything?
Yes, a handbag and some perfume. I'm also thinking of buying a camera, but I think they might be cheaper online.
And where are your kids now?
They're with my husband in that restaurant over there having lunch. My youngest is usually very good, but he's being very difficult today. So we've decided to take it in turns to look after them.
Thanks very much. So that's how people are passing the time at Heathrow today, Dan. Back to you in the studio.
Thanks, Nicole. Now, these days, many people seem to...
There is a minute now to finish the task. This is the end of task one. Go on to task two. Task two, India. Listen to an interview with a woman who has been to India and is giving advice to those who are planning to go. Circle the correct option. You have 2 minutes now to read the task.
So, what does the first-time visitor need to know about India and how to make the most of their time there?
Well, the first thing you should remember is that the temperature in India goes from hot to extremely hot, and if you don't want to spend most of your holiday in bed with sunstroke, you should definitely take precautions.
Such as?
Well, the obvious things, really. Drink plenty of water, use sun cream on the exposed parts of the body, and wear a hat and sunglasses whenever you're outdoors.
And always wear light clothes, I suppose.
Absolutely.
While we're on the subject of clothes, are there any clothing tips you can give us?
Well, it's important to dress modestly. You don't want to offend your hosts by exposing too much of your body. And always remember to do the right things when you enter a church or a temple or a mosque. Take your shoes off, and in some places you should cover your head too. You'll also find some temples that don't allow any leather items inside at all, so you might have to leave your bag or belt at the door.
And how do we know which places allow what?
There's often a sign at the door, but it's a good idea to ask too, to be sure.
Is there anything else we should know about places of worship?
Not really, apart from the fact that you should remain quiet and respectful at all times, like you would in a church here. However, you will find that certain areas of temples are not open to non-Hindus. This is something you must respect.
And photography?
Again, this depends on the place. In fact, many places, and this includes museums and archaeological sites too, allow photography, but you will have to pay more to go in. If you want to use a video camera, the entrance fee will be a little higher.
What about shopping in India? I'm sure there are many beautiful things to buy, and it's a great place for picking up a bargain or two.
That's certainly correct. India offers a great shopping experience, but there are a few things you should keep in mind.
For example?
For example, it's always good to start, at least, in government handicraft shops. The prices are fixed and the quality is guaranteed, so you know exactly what you're getting. If there isn't such a shop nearby, then check out the prices in a few shops before you buy anything. Finally, if you're feeling brave, then local markets are a great experience. But remember, bargaining is expected and everyone enjoys it. However, you should also get used to the fact that you will pay more than the locals pay. But that's the same for all tourists.
Talking of the locals, what does a visitor to India need to know about the local people?
First of all, Indians are extremely warm and friendly people, and many love to start conversations with foreigners, so don't be surprised if you find people chatting to you while you're walking down the street. If you are introduced to a local, don't shake hands. You should say hello with the Namaste. This is when the hands are pressed together as if you were praying. People will really like it if you do this.
What about beggars?
Well, it's of course true that there are a lot of beggars in India, and this can be disturbing for many tourists. It's something you will need to get used to if you want to enjoy your holiday. The most important thing is not to let them hassle you and not to encourage them by giving them too much money.
So, what's the best thing to do? Give some money?
Yes, a couple of rupees would be fine.
Well, we're actually running out of time, and I'm sure there are many more things we need to mention, but if you could give us perhaps one last piece of advice that might help us more than any other, what would it be?
Okay, India is a fascinating place, like no other place you will have ever seen. However, at times you will find it very frustrating, and one of the reasons for this is that everything in India takes longer. So always give yourself extra time for whatever you want to do, from a visit to the post office, to changing money, to eating out. Don't let it stress you out. Indians themselves like to joke about Indian stretchable time. It's just part of their way of life, and something you need to adapt to if you want to enjoy yourself.
You have half a minute now to check your work. Then you will hear the text a second time.
So, what does the first-time visitor need to know about India and how to make the most of their time there?
Well, the first thing you should remember is that the temperature in India goes from hot to extremely hot, and if you don't want to spend most of your holiday in bed with sunstroke, you should definitely take precautions.
Such as?
Well, the obvious things, really. Drink plenty of water, use sun cream on the exposed parts of the body, and wear a hat and sunglasses whenever you're outdoors.
And always wear light clothes, I suppose.
Absolutely.
While we're on the subject of clothes, are there any clothing tips you can give us?
Well, it's important to dress modestly. You don't want to offend your hosts by exposing too much of your body. And always remember to do the right things when you enter a church or a temple or a mosque. Take your shoes off, and in some places you should cover your head too. You'll also find some temples that don't allow any leather items inside at all, so you might have to leave your bag or belt at the door.
And how do we know which places allow what?
There's often a sign at the door, but it's a good idea to ask too, to be sure.
Is there anything else we should know about places of worship?
Not really, apart from the fact that you should remain quiet and respectful at all times, like you would in a church here. However, you will find that certain areas of temples are not open to non-Hindus. This is something you must respect.
And photography?
Again, this depends on the place. In fact, many places, and this includes museums and archaeological sites too, allow photography, but you will have to pay more to go in. If you want to use a video camera, the entrance fee will be a little higher.
What about shopping in India? I'm sure there are many beautiful things to buy, and it's a great place for picking up a bargain or two.
That's certainly correct. India offers a great shopping experience, but there are a few things you should keep in mind.
For example?
For example, it's always good to start, at least, in government handicraft shops. The prices are fixed and the quality is guaranteed, so you know exactly what you're getting. If there isn't such a shop nearby, then check out the prices in a few shops before you buy anything. Finally, if you're feeling brave, then local markets are a great experience. But remember, bargaining is expected and everyone enjoys it. However, you should also get used to the fact that you will pay more than the locals pay. But that's the same for all tourists.
Talking of the locals, what does a visitor to India need to know about the local people?
First of all, Indians are extremely warm and friendly people, and many love to start conversations with foreigners, so don't be surprised if you find people chatting to you while you're walking down the street. If you are introduced to a local, don't shake hands. You should say hello with a namaste. This is when the hands are pressed together as if you were praying. People will really like it if you do this.
What about beggars?
Well, it's of course true that there are a lot of beggars in India, and this can be disturbing for many tourists. It's something you will need to get used to if you want to enjoy your holiday. The most important thing is not to let them hassle you and not to encourage them by giving them too much money.
So, what's the best thing to do? Give some money?
Yes, a couple of rupees would be fine.
Well, we're actually running out of time and I'm sure there are many more things we need to mention, but if you could give us perhaps one last piece of advice that might help us more than any other, what would it be?
Okay, India is a fascinating place, like no other place you will have ever seen. However, at times you will find it very frustrating. And one of the reasons for this is that everything in India takes longer. So always give yourself extra time for whatever you want to do, from a visit to the post office, to changing money, to eating out. Don't let it stress you out. Indians themselves like to joke about Indian stretchable time. It's just part of their way of life and something you need to adapt to if you want to enjoy yourself.
You have half a minute now to finish the task. Bye. This is the end of task two. Go on to task three. Task three. News. Listen to different people's views about the impact of news on our lives. Fill the gaps with the missing information. Look at the example. You have a minute to read the task.
Since you're listening to this program, odds are you're not taking the advice of Dr. Andrew Weil. He's written a book titled 8 Weeks to Optimum Health, and he recommends reducing your daily intake of news. Weil is not the only one trying to get people to take a break from coverage of daily events.
When I was a kid, I loved a baseball novel called The Southpaw. It was the first volume of a baseball quartet written by Mark Harris. What I only learned recently was that Harris wrote a long essay in the New York Times back in the early 70s, in which he said reading a daily newspaper was a useless addiction. 30 years later, Harris still believes that.
Somebody gets up in the morning, and the first thing he or she has to do is get that newspaper. And then they have to have it with the coffee, and it's kind of two addictions go together.
Harris left his job with a newspaper and turned to writing novels. He also turned to teaching. Academia turns out to be a place filled with news resistors. Take Gabrielle Spiegel. Perhaps it's understandable that a medievalist would find daily news, in her words, ephemeral, repetitive, and inconsequential.
But I think my underlying reason is that, you know, life is short. There's only a certain amount of time that you have to spend on things. And I have always believed that there are two things you really need to get through life. The first is a really rich fantasy life, so you can imagine what the possibilities are. And the other is a sense of humor, so you can deal with what is. And actually, I'd rather spend my time on my fantasy life and reading novels than reading newspapers.
John Somerville is a professor of history at the University of Florida and the author of works on the history of religion in England. He has written a book called How the News Makes Us Dumb. His main argument against daily news is the daily part. He argues that dailiness, as he puts it, chops everything down to a standard size, making it harder to get perspective.
That one feature by itself, regardless of the competence and the professionalism of the journalist, it's lethal. If dumbness is the inability to make connection, then you can see how taking in everything on a daily basis is going to hurt our ability to make the connections.
As a historian of religion, Somerville believes there is a natural antagonism between the news's emphasis on the immediate and religion, which points toward the more eternal. And it does seem that those involved in spiritual practices are often the most resistant to the daily news barrage. Thupten Shudrin is a Buddhist nun. She says the media presents problems well, but doesn't give time or space to those helping to remedy the situation.
And it creates a sense of despair. And that sense of despair immobilizes us from actually contributing to the benefit of society and doing something to help others.
She also says many people keep themselves plugged in because they don't know how to be alone with themselves. Historian Gabrielle Spiegel agrees.
I think we live in a society that offers us very, very little time alone. And the way children are raised, you know, set in front of televisions, they don't have a lot of time to be by themselves. When my children were little, we used to have a thing called Mommy's Hour, in which, you know, they had to go in their rooms and just think for an hour or two a day. So I could think for an hour or two a day.
You have half a minute now to check your work. Then you will hear the text a second time.
Since you're listening to this program, odds are you're not taking the advice of Dr. Andrew Weil. He's written a book titled 8 Weeks to Optimum Health, and he recommends reducing your daily intake of news. Weil is not the only one trying to get people to take a break from coverage of daily events.
When I was a kid, I loved a baseball novel called The Southpaw. It was the first volume of a baseball quartet written by Mark Harris. What I only learned recently was that Harris wrote a long essay in the New York Times back in the early 70s, in which he said reading a daily newspaper was a useless addiction. 30 years later, Harris still believes that.
Somebody gets up in the morning, and the first thing he or she has to do is get that newspaper. And then they have to have it with the coffee, and it's kind of two addictions go together.
Harris left his job with a newspaper and turned to writing novels. He also turned to teaching. Academia turns out to be a place filled with news resistors. Take Gabrielle Spiegel. Perhaps it's understandable that a medievalist would find daily news, in her words, ephemeral, repetitive, and inconsequential.
But I think my underlying reason is that, you know, life is short. There's only a certain amount of time that you have to spend on things. And I have always believed that there are two things you really need to get through life. The first is a really rich fantasy life, so you can imagine what the possibilities are. And the other is a sense of humor, so you can deal with what is. And actually, I'd rather spend my time on my fantasy life and reading novels than reading newspapers.
John Somerville is a professor of history at the University of Florida and the author of works on the history of religion in England. He has written a book called How the News Makes Us Dumb. His main argument against daily news is the daily part. He argues that dailiness, as he puts it, chops everything down to a standard size, making it harder to get perspective.
That one feature by itself, regardless of the competence and the professionalism of the journalists, it's lethal. If dumbness is the inability to make connection, then you can see how taking in everything on a daily basis is going to hurt our ability to make the connections.
As a historian of religion, Somerville believes there is a natural antagonism between the news's emphasis on the immediate and religion, which points toward the more eternal. And it does seem that those involved in spiritual practices are often the most resistant to the daily news barrage. Thupten Shudrin is a Buddhist nun. She says the media presents problems well, but doesn't give time or space to those helping to remedy the situation.
And it creates a sense of despair, and that sense of despair immobilizes us from actually contributing to the benefit of society and doing something to help others.
She also says many people keep themselves plugged in because they don't know how to be alone with themselves. Historian Gabrielle Spiegel agrees.
I think we live in a society that offers us very, very little time alone. And the way children are raised, you know, set in front of televisions, they don't have a lot of time to be by themselves. When my children were little, we used to have a thing called Mommy's Hour, in which, you know, they had to go in their rooms and just think for an hour or two a day. So I could think for an hour or two a day.
There is a minute now to finish the task. This is the end of Task 3 and the whole listening test.